What's up, y'all, and welcome to the Gumbo Mix. My name is D. Dwayne, and I'm about to make you some of my best gumbo filled with the greatest music from back in the day. There's no telling what you might hear in this gumbo, but every ingredient is important to the overall mix and is sure to please your musical palate. Let me turn the stove on and bring the heat up as you enjoy this batch of D. Dwayne's Gumbo Mix. We have great news to share with you, our listeners and fans of the Gumbo Mix. The Gumbo Mix can now be heard live on radio station KSER 90.7 FM and on the net at kser.org. The show airs every Saturday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, so be sure to tune in and put your request in the Gumbo Pot live and on the air. That's every Saturday from 5 to 7 on kser.org and 90.7 KSER FM. Celebrating over 50 years in the music business and still going strong, Tommy James of Tommy James and the Shondells would be the first person to tell you that he has been blessed throughout his career. One of the things that I like most about Tommy is his wisdom, experience, and knowledge of himself. I mean, this guy keeps going at the pace of a teenager, kicking out quality performances and excellent music. I grew up on his music, and probably so did you. And still, it brings a smile to my face and fond memories to my spirit. Getting their start in 1964, Tommy James and the Shondells had 12 top 40 hits, with 5 of them going to the top 10. Tommy James is one of those kind of guys that just keeps going and moving forward no matter what. It was a pleasure to meet and talk to a true survivor and a true pioneer of the music business. My name is D. Dwayne, and this is the Gumbo Mix's presentation of One-on-One with Tommy James.
Making a living the old hard way, taking and giving my day by day. I did snow and rain and a bright sunshine,
taking the land.
I understand you're coming to our area here real soon.
That's right. We're very excited about it. We're going to be at the Tulalip Resort Casino on November 2nd.
Right.
And it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun show. It's going to be, we're going to cram as many hits as we can into the time we have, and we're going to get a chance to meet people after the show.
Uh-huh. Excellent. They're going to love it. I mean, I play your music on my radio program quite often, and
thank you.
And there's a couple of your songs that really have embedded themselves into my life, and so
that's great.
Yeah, definitely. And so I know we're looking forward to you up here in the Northwest. Absolutely.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, we don't get up there all that often, and so when we do, it's real special. We got a lot of fans up there, and they do know how to rock. So it's going to be fun.
My first question is, you're from Niles, Michigan, right?
That's right. That's right. Little town in Michigan, where in southern Michigan, where it all started out for me.
Now, that's about 195 miles away from Detroit. Did the Motown have an influence on your music?
Oh, very definitely. But, you know, we were, you know, sort of in a dead zone between Chicago on one side and Detroit on the other. And so when we put our first record out, Hanky Panky, before it actually became a hit, 2 years before it became a hit everywhere else, we were sort of in a dead zone and had no distribution. And so, you know, we were sort of all alone back there. I had a lot of influence from Detroit, but even more from Chicago, because we would hear the Chicago radio stations.
Right. Uh-huh. Wow, that's got to be something else to be in the middle of Detroit and Chicago. Wow.
Yes, that's right. You know, I was very influenced, actually mostly by Chicago radio. So we were a little bit further. We were far away from Detroit as far as radio was concerned. We were about 90 miles from Chicago. And so when I was growing up, you know, I had my band, my group, the Shondells, and, you know, we were very influenced by Chicago radio.
Excellent, excellent. Now, in 1956, you also had a hit, speaking of Hanky Panky, but no, and you had no band. That's
no, that's right. When the record first happened, it was, this is in 1966.
Right.
I had graduated from high school in 65, and I took my band on the road that year, and, you know, we were playing all around the Midwest. And the story of Hanky Panky was when, you know, we had recorded this record 2 years earlier.
Right.
And, had, you know, it came and went, and we totally forgot about it. So I'm playing this little club in early 66, this dumpy little club in Wisconsin, and right in the middle of my 2 weeks, the IRS shuts the guy down for not paying his taxes. So we had to go home. We crawled back to Michigan feeling like real losers.
Right.
But that's how the good Lord works, because as soon as I got home, I got the call that changed my life.
Wow.
And if I hadn't have been home, you and I wouldn't be talking here today.
Wow, that's amazing.
So what happened was a disc jockey from Pittsburgh called and let me know that Hanky Panky, this record that I had recorded 2 years earlier, was sitting at number one.
Wow.
And I said, how the hell did that happen? And he said that they had bootlegged it in Pittsburgh. And, you know, God bless the crooks, right?
Exactly.
So they bootlegged it in Pittsburgh, and they sold 80,000 of them in 10 days.
Wow.
And we were sitting at number one in Pittsburgh. So they said, can you come and do some TV and radio? And so I went with the I went to Pittsburgh, and I had no group. And I couldn't put the original group back together. They were all different parts of the world.
Right.
And so when I got there, I grabbed a group from Pittsburgh called, they were working as the Raconteurs, and they became the new Shondells.
Wow.
And a week later, then we took the master to Roulette to New York and ended up selling it to Roulette.
Uh-huh.
And they made it number one in the world.
Oh, man, amazing.
That's how my career started.
Yeah, you're right. God is good, but I tell you,
He is.
My baby does the hanky panky. My baby does the hanky panky. Walking on down the line.
Yeah,
you know I saw her for the very first time. A pretty little girl standing all alone. Baby, can I take you home? I never saw her, never saw her. My baby does a hanky panky.
Now, I understand that you guys turned down an opportunity to perform at Woodstock.
Well, that's true. I was sitting in Hawaii in 1969 in the middle of paradise, and we had a house. We were playing one date in Hilo, and we had 2 weeks off. We were supposed to play the second date in Hawaii, in Honolulu, and so we're sitting literally at a mansion right on the foot of Diamond Head on the ocean. Mm-hmm. And so I get a call from my secretary she said, listen, Artie Kornfeld was up, and they're doing this big gig in upstate New York at a pig farm, and they'd like you to come. I said, what did you say?
A pig farm?
And she says, yeah, well, they say it's going to be a big gig. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, you go ahead and start, and if we're not there, you guys start without us. And they did, and it was Woodstock, and we realized we screwed up pretty bad.
That's a good story. That's a good story.
I actually have gotten more mileage out of this story than if we'd actually done the gig.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Now, all this time, I thought Moni was about a girl, but it's about a life insurance company song.
Well, what happened with Moni is that we had recorded the track.
Uh huh.
And this is in '68. We recorded the track, and I didn't have a title. And so, we recorded this party rock track, and, you know, Richie Cordell, my songwriting partner back then, and I were trying to come up with a title because, you know, it was like the next day we had to go in and do the vocal, and I had no working title. So everything we came up with sounded so stupid. We were looking for a sort of silly name, two-syllable girl's name, like a Sloopy or a Boney Maroney or something.
Right.
And so nothing was working. And so my apartment was in the middle of Manhattan, and we throw our guitars down. We go out on the terrace, and we're looking up at the night sky, and the first thing our eyes fall on is the Mutual of New York insurance company sign.
Uh-huh.
Mony. Just went Moni, 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 Moni. And we just started laughing because, you know, it was like God talking to us, you know, here's the title. And I couldn't believe that sign had been outside my window for 4 years and I never noticed it, and all of a sudden we saw it. And I told Richie, I said, you know, if we hadn't seen that sign, I was so desperate for a title, we might have called the thing Equitable. Hotel Taft or something.
Oh, that's great.
Here she comes now, saying, Moni, Moni. Well, shoot 'em down, turn around, come home, Moni. Yeah.
you've had a very amazing career in this business. Can we expect to see a movie coming out real soon?
That's right. Well, our book, Me, the Mob, and the Music, is being turned into a film.
Mm-hmm.
And the story, it basically is about our crazy relationship at Roulette Records, where we had most of our hits.
Right.
And the reason it was crazy is because, unbeknownst to us when we signed the deal, Roulette was a front for the Genovese crime family in New York.
Wow.
Of course, we didn't know any of that. And so, you know, we learned it, you know, piece by piece as we would see these people that we recognized from TV, these gangsters coming up to Roulette.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, we couldn't talk about any of this. So the gist of the story is, while we were having all these hits with Crimson and Clover and Crystal Blue and I Think We're Alone Now and all these hits, there was this very dark and sinister story going on behind us that we couldn't say a word about.
Right.
And finally, Martin Fitzpatrick, my co-author on this, and I, once all the Roulette regulars, as I called them, died, we felt we could talk about it, because some of these guys were still walking around. Finally, we finished the book, and as soon as we did, we started getting calls for the movie rights and the Broadway rights and so forth. So it's been out since 2010 in book form, and it's still selling. It's in its eighth printing so far, and the movie is being produced by Barbara DeFina, who produced Goodfellas and Casino and The Color of Money, Hugo a couple of years ago with Martin Scorsese. And we're really glad to have her. And the screenplay has just been written by Matthew Stone. And he's a brilliant screenplay writer. And the next thing is that they're picking a director now. And as soon as the director comes on board, then things will speed up and they'll do the casting and the rest of it. But I'm really happy to see this all come together.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see it, man. I mean, what a great story that is, you know, because, you know, there's always been this rumor that the mob was involved in the music business. But
sure.
But I don't really hear that.
Well, they were. And this was ground zero for that stuff, you know.
Come walking up.
in the studio. We're finishing up a new album called Alive.
Yeah.
And that will be out the after the first of the year, probably in February or March.
Excellent.
So there's a lot going on. I also have my own radio show.
Yeah,
on Sirius XM. Yeah,
I got that. Absolutely, that's part of my questions. Absolutely. So you, is it a talk show or are you playing music too?
Well, we're on the 60s on 6, you know, the 60s channel, and we're on every Sunday from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay.
And you know, they let me play whatever I want. They've let me just totally go crazy. So I'm playing not only the hits that I like, but I'm getting to play, rare songs that nobody ever heard from the 60s, and also some B-sides. And then I get to play, I'm going to be able to break my new album on the 60s channel.
That's cool, man. That is
Isn't that
really
great?
Cool. Absolutely.
So they're letting me play anything I want to play, so that's great. Hey, I'll tell you something. As I research this stuff, I can't believe. You know what I seem to be attracted to? I didn't realize it. What I seem to be attracted to is early 60s R&B.
Uh-huh.
I can't believe how much of that stuff I love, and as I go through it, a lot of them that I had forgotten about.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, guys like Wilson Pickett in the early 60s. What an amazing voice and talent he was. But, I mean, you know, I can't believe how much of this stuff, they let me play anything I want, so that's great. Isn't that a great feeling?
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling. And not only that, but see, that music, too, a lot of it, what makes it so amazing, is that it was four track was state-of-the-art.
That's right.
They only have four tracks. So
that's right.
So that means,
hey, listen, and before that, it was just mono. You know, my first record was made in mono.
Right.
So that's true. I really love the mono mixes too over the radio, because that's what you heard when they became hits. That's what you heard was a mono mix over the radio on AM radio.
My goodness.
So today, you know, I don't particularly like the stereo mixes that are on four-track because, you know, they're very primitive.
Uh-huh.
You know, you may have the singer on one side and the drums on the other, you know.
Exactly.
So I love playing the original mono mixes.
Now, Tommy, your music has been played on the radio for over 21 million times. Is that right? Is that correct?
Well, that's the BMI number. That was... I just got an award for that, for all the airplay. I tell you the truth, I would have never believed when I first started out that I'd be doing this 50 years later.
Wow.
Now, you know, I've been, you know, my first record was 52 years ago, and it just, I would never in a million years have thought we'd be doing it this long, but I love doing it. It's all I really ever wanted to do.
Wow.
You know,
you've had an amazing career. Now, one of my favorite songs, of course, is Crystal Blue Persuasion. What is the meaning of that song, Tommy?
Well, it was about becoming a Christian.
Oh, is that right?
That's the real meaning of the song. And a fellow brought me a title, a poem called Crystal Persuasion back in 1969. It was a kid from a college down in Atlanta. We played this college down there, and he came to me with a poem called Crystal Persuasion. And you know, I'm always looking for titles, always looking for word combinations. I just thought that was a very interesting combination of words, and so I added the word blue to it because we needed an extra syllable in there to make it sound right. And wrote the song about the Book of Revelation.
Wow.
The Crystal City in Revelation 22. And, of course, back then we didn't think anything about being politically correct or anything, you know.
Sure.
Just wrote what was on my mind. Mm-hmm. And so the song was about, you know, becoming a Christian.
That's amazing. I never knew that.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, very interesting. I never knew that. Wow.
Look over yonder. What do you see? The sun is rising. Most definitely. A new day is coming.
Your music has been recorded and performed by anyone from Tom Jones to Prince. Is there a remake of one of your songs that you really like a lot?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. One of my favorites, well, of course, one, it was Crystal Blue by Prince. Prince did an incredible job, not too long, Crimson and Clover, before he died.
I never knew that. I'm going to look
it up. Yeah, and it went number one. It was a digital album that went number one from his album called Lotus Flower.
Uh-huh.
Another one is REM's version of Dragon Line from the Austin Powers movie, you know, it was called The Spy Who Shagged Me. They did REM did Dragon Line as one of the main songs in the movie and did a really incredible job with it.
Uh-huh.
So those are two of my favorites.
Prince did Crimson and Clover?
Prince did Crimson and Clover, and R.E.M. did Dragon the Line, yeah.
I'm going to look them up. I'm going to look them both up. Boy,
great.
Can't imagine how that's down. So you like both of those versions, huh?
I do. I really do.
Wow. Well, I do want to congratulate you, Tommy, on being inducted into the New Jersey Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much.
Do you feel like you've accomplished everything that you set out to do in your career?
Well, apparently not, because I'm still doing it. I really want this. I would like this movie to come out, and that you know, we're looking probably at another year and a half to 2 years by the time they do all the casting and everything. That's a big deal for me, and also, just to keep playing for the fans. As long as I stay healthy and can do it, it's like being an athlete every year.
Yeah.
And gets a little harder every year, you know. But I love performing. I love playing live, and love being with the fans.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, and we love having you, you know, come visit us every now and then, and do your show up here. And we're excited. We can't wait, man. I mean,
but we're gonna have fun. That's gonna be a good night.
Absolutely. Now, I understand your latest album, Alive. When is that going to be released?
That's going to be released the first quarter of 2019, and probably March or March, maybe April. But it's really been a labor of love. It's there are two songs from the movie in the album, including a new remake of I Think We're Alone Now that's done slow and acoustic.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be the closing credits for the movie, and we're going to do it in the show.
Oh, cool.
At Tulalip. And then a new song called Distant Thunder that's also in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then several other new songs, but then we did a remake of Dragon the Line that's got a little... I did the Dragon the Line with a rapper named Tone Z, who's a talented guy, super talented guy, and does a little rap in the new version of Dragon the Line.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really great. He does a great rap.
Okay, cool.
And that's on the album?
That's on the album. Okay.
And so there's a whole lot of different stuff on the album, and we're really excited to get out. It's my first studio album in 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back to the fold.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it just occurred to me that love, peace, and brotherhood that you sang about 50 years ago is still needed in today's world.
Oh, more than ever, huh?
Are you still inspired to write about that?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, you'll hear some of it on the album, but I just, the way I feel... is that music is the one thing that brings everybody together.
Right.
And boy, do we need that now.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I couldn't have said it better. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, Tommy, I really have to thank you for all of this music and all the memories. And I enjoy all this music every time I hear it. And
thank you, man.
I really appreciate you taking the time out for this.
Well, it's great talking with you. And if you get a chance to go to the show, don't be a stranger.
Absolutely. I'll come back and shake your hand.
Absolutely.
Are you guys wrapping up the tour, or is the tour close?
Well, you know, it just seems one turns into another. We're just, if you come to our website, TommyJames.com, or Twitter, or Facebook, on our website is a list of the dates.
Uh-huh.
So, and as soon as we're done with this year, we'll start again next year. So, if you want to see, catch our dates, just come to the website.
Okay. All right.
All right, my friend.
Children behave. That's what they say when we're together. And watch how you play. They don't understand. And so we're running down. Holding on to one another's hand, trying to get away.
Sincere thanks to Mr. Tommy James for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk with me for this interview. Thank you also to Carol Ross and to my friends at Flying A Media for their work and support of the Gumbo Mix. Thank you to the management and staff at KSCR, and most of all, thank you to the listeners who tune in for a bowl of gumbo every week. My name is Dee DeWayne. Thanks a bunch and take care.